All right, so there's BCAT. Give it maybe just one more
30 seconds.
Couple, yeah, there you go.
Okay, good evening. Call the meeting to order. This is the Tuesday, June 16th, 2020 meeting of the Kitsap County Planning Commission, 5:31 p.m. Welcome to everybody. Introductions, we'll introduce the members of the Planning Commission and we'll start in the south end with Commissioner Kim Allen.
Good evening, my name is Kim Allen and I represent South Kitsap.
Okay, great, Commissioner Galloway.
Commissioner Ed Galloway, South Kitsap.
Okay. And Commissioner Svensson could not be here. We'll move to Central Kitsap with Commissioner Shattuck.
Hello, Rick Shattuck from the Central Kitsap District.
Great. Commissioner Beam.
Alan Beam from the Central District.
And Mike Eliason, Central District. I'll move to the North End. Commissioner Mall.
Amy Mall, North Kitsap.
And Commissioner Phillips.
Joe Phillips, North Kitsap.
Great. And I understand that Commissioner Murphy may be joining us at some point during the meeting. Okay. Next item is item B, virtual meeting protocol. And we're starting to get used to this process now. By the time we finally figure it out, we'll go back to in-person meetings, right? So welcome, and a special shout out to BCAT. We appreciate BCAT's broadcasting it so that members of the public can virtually see us in our process and participate in these meetings. Item C, adoption of agenda. Are there any additions or corrections to the agenda? Okay, hearing none, is there a motion to approve the agenda as presented?
Move to approve the agenda.
Okay, we have a motion. We have a motion and a second to approve the agenda as presented. All those in favor signify by saying aye and raising your hand.
Aye.
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 All those opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Item D, adoption of minutes, meeting minutes of May 19th, 2020. Are there any additions or corrections? Okay, I'm hearing none so far. The only one I have is on page one, line 33 under general public comment. It reads, the chair opens the floor to speakers wishing to provide testimony on subjects or items not listed on tonight's agenda. And what I would like to do, unless I said that wrong during the meeting, what I normally do is I say you can speak about any topic, except if there's a public hearing, please await to speak about that subject when we get to it in the meeting. I think the easiest way to correct that is just to delete the words on subjects or items not listed on tonight's agenda, so that the correction would be the chair opens the floor to speakers wishing to provide testimony, period. Is that with your approval?
Would that really be testimony?
Well, it's during open public comment. We could just refer to public comment, so it could be speakers wishing to provide public comment.
Yes.
That works too. Okay. Yeah, I'm open to changing that to public comment. The main part is I just wanted to delete the reference to items not listed on the agenda. Okay, any other corrections?
So if I may, Chair Lyason, that was the particular phrasing that was used when we instituted the public comment section, because if someone were to show and provide testimony, I guess as long as you clarify that it wouldn't be included in the record either way, if it opens up for topics that haven't been noticed, it affords other opportunities for individuals to provide comment and testimony before the Planning Commission when the others might not realize that they have that opportunity as well.
Yeah, well, I think the reason I wanted to delete is I don't remember announcing saying you could provide comment about any topic except the agenda items.
That's just the standing verbiage that we had in there included when we adopted the rule to include public comment. So I can take it, I can definitely remove it. Just for reference as to why it was worded.
Why it was originally there. Yeah, maybe let's go ahead and remove it because that's not what I announced at the meeting. And of course, as you know, meeting minutes reflected what actually happened during the meeting. And then maybe either at this meeting later or another meeting, we can discuss that very topic as to what should be allowed during general public comment.
All right.
Okay, great. Any other corrections to the meeting minutes? Okay, hearing none, is there a motion to approve the meeting minutes of May 19th, 2020 as corrected?
Move to approve the minutes of the meetings as corrected.
Okay, is there a second?
A second.
Okay, all those in favor of approving the meeting minutes of May 19th, 2020 as corrected, please say aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any in opposition? And any abstentions? Okay, the motion's approved.
Abstain.
Meeting minutes of June 2nd, 2020 will be deferred until a future meeting. Okay. Item E, general public comment. This is the opportunity for members of the public to provide testimony about any subject. Are there any members of the public who wish to participate? And we should mention, since we're going to virtual, what you would need to do if you haven't arranged with the clerk already to provide testimony would be to select on your screen to raise your hand. There's also a chat box where you can provide comments to us as well. I know just prior to the meeting, I checked my email just about after 4 o'clock and I had received and the staff had received an email from Bill Palmer of the Kitsap Alliance of Property Owners in reference to the Stormwater Design Manual update. And I see Bill is logged in as a participant. Bill, can you hear us? I'm guessing not, must be some technical issue and come back to him. Okay, are there any other members of the public that wish to provide any testimony to the Planning Commission? Any public comment to the Planning Commission?
Let me go ahead and unmute Mr. Palmer and we can ask him again here. We'll see if that helps. Hold on. Mr. Palmer, are you able to unmute yourself now? It's kind of a two-step process when we get going with these.
I guess not.
There we go.
Audially, I'm here by phone.
That's okay, we can hear you now.
Okay.
So I don't know if you could hear earlier. I received your letter that you provided to the Planning Commission just after 4 p.m. today. I don't believe it has been distributed to every member of the Planning Commission so far, but we will get it to everybody. But we want to give you the opportunity to provide any general public comment right now.
General public comment, I'll postpone and make my comments at the public hearing consideration.
Okay. Sounds great. Are there any other members of the public that wish to provide public comment at this time? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to agenda item F, announcements. Do any members of the commission or staff have any announcements? Okay, hearing none. Actually, this might be a good time. I know we have a full agenda, but let's discuss a general public comment right now. So we know every jurisdiction handles it a little bit differently. And of course, we've from time to time, throughout the agenda, we have public hearings during the course of the meeting where people can provide public comment. But we also have this general public comment where you can discuss any item. And I think what Amanda, the clerk, was referring to is obviously making sure we stay within the constraints of people are providing testimony and that type of thing about either non-pertinent matters or if we've gone beyond a public comment period for an agenda item and we're now into decision only phase. So I thought maybe we could kind of open it up and have a general discussion to see what do we want to have on there. I know if you're a member of the public coming in, you're not familiar with the process, it would be helpful if people can understand it. And we have that page 2 on the agenda, but it is quite lengthy for people to read prior to coming to the meeting. it's up to the commission to decide how you want to handle it, but I generally consider general public comment to be the first item in the agenda where you can comment about any matter. It doesn't mean you're necessarily restricted to items, any item except those on the agenda. And for example, tonight, unless the commission allows you to, the only opportunity the member of the public would have to provide testimony would be during item E, general public comment, because under G and H, we get to work study where we don't provide public comment. So the only way you could fix that is at the conclusion of those two items, have public comment again later on the agenda, or under item E, allow them to participate and talk about those subjects. Or you could, if the commission decided to, could open it up to public comment when you get to each individual work study items. And there are some councils and commissions that don't allow public comment during work study. So it depends on how you'd like to proceed. Commissioner Shattuck.
Well, my only concern, Mr. Chair, is with regard to having a record. You know, my biggest concern is that someone stands up during the general comment period, believing they're giving public testimony in a public hearing. And the problem is, if they aren't actually part of the record, if they want to bring an appeal, there's no record establishing that they have standing, that they participated in this earlier process. So I guess, again, as we're going through, I just would like to make sure we have a nice clean line. So if we say, look, there's going to be a public hearing on this, if you want to give public testimony, it's got to be during the hearing. It can't be during the general comment period. You won't get standing to appeal this decision. So that's the concern I would have.
Okay. Angie?
No, I would echo Mr. Shattuck's concerns again today, especially as it relates to Mr. Palmer's testimony. Again, we just received it recently. We have not distributed to the entire Planning Commission at this moment in time, nor have we had an opportunity, as both Public Works as well as Community Development Departments had an opportunity to take a look and do a deeper dive for a response. So we will go over during our work study presentation, which is our second work study on the Stormwater Design Manual and Associated Code Updates. We will go over a tentative timeline for the Planning Commission public hearing as it relates to the second draft, as well as Title 12 code amendments. We are targeting, I believe, a July 7th public hearing where folks can provide verbal testimony, as well as it is customary to keep the written record open for a certain period of time once that verbal opportunity has been closed.
Okay. Great. Any other comments? Commissioner Allen?
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Commissioner Allen.
Yeah, I think that we established this. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. We established this agenda item when I was the chair, and I think one of the we did want to address Commissioner Shattuck's concern. Every time that I would open that item, I would remind people that they were not providing testimony that was part of a public hearing and a public hearing record, that they would have to participate in that as well in order to be a party of record for that particular item. So I think with a caveat, because I do think that people sometimes come to the Planning Commission meetings wanting to speak on some of the items that that are on the agenda later. You know, it's certainly the commission's choice as to whether you want to hear that individually, but I would still, anytime we would have any general public comment, make it clear that those comments are not becoming part of the public record for an individual item.
Great, and I remember you doing that, and I think that's a great solution to it. So I would recommend, in light of Commissioner Shattuck and Allen's comments and our past history, that we just continue with the past practice, that it kind of be a catch-all, that we don't necessarily limit anybody to what they want to provide during that portion of the meeting, but that the chairperson announce to the individual given the testimony that it is not part of the public record, and to tell them they might want to come back during that portion, either at that meeting or during a future meeting, to provide the testimony. Okay, great. Okay, any other announcements? Okay, I don't see any others, so it looks like we can move on, except I want to personally thank Commissioner Phillips. The last meeting, he recommended that when I told him I was getting stressed out about all the news coverage, and he suggested music. And I want to let him know I've been listening to public television, KCTS concerts, and I feel a lot better.
There you go.
A little less news coverage. Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to item G, work study, stormwater design manual update. Angie Silva and Dave Tucker.
I guess I will kick it off. Good evening, planning commissioners and members of the public. I'm Angie Silva with the Department of Community Development. Before I launch into our work study item, I will give everyone fair warning. While you were talking about announcements as well as meeting minutes, I lost internet connection to my office, so I was scrambling to get back on. So I apologize if I disappear. I will make every attempt to get back onto the planning commission meeting. Here with me today, as the chair mentioned, is Dave Tucker, Assistant Director of Public Works Utilities, as well as some of the similar staff which attended our May 19th Planning Commission work study, which was our first opportunity to speak to about the Stormwater Design Manual update. We also have Michelle Philly from Public Works Stormwater Utility. We have Sean O'Leary, which is part of our Department of Community Development DSC, Development Services Engineering Team. Scott Diener, who's the manager of Development Service Engineering Team, DSE, as well as, I think we had Michelle Perdue. There we go, Michelle Perdue, who's the program manager for the Stormwater Utility and Public Works itself, as well as Robin Kirschbaum, who was part of the presentation at the May 19th work study, a consultant who has been helping us significantly on the technical elements of the update to the design manual, as well as a huge resource to the Title 12 amendments you received. Before we start with a kind of a PowerPoint presentation, did the planning commissioners receive the executive summary as well as several attachments, which included a second draft stormwater design manual, as well as Title 12, which is our stormwater drainage code, code amendments, an updated change matrix to reflect changes from 2016 to the first draft we spoke to at the May 19th work study, as well as updated to reflect the second draft and the Title 12 amendments you see tonight. Also included in that package of materials to the Planning Commission was Kitsap Building Association responses to comments and questions received, as well as a copy of water as a resource policy. This information is also posted on the department's project website for this effort, as well as on the Planning Commission website as well for those listening at home. With that, I'm going to share the PowerPoint with everyone, so bear with me. Oh, Miss Amanda, looks like I'm disabled to share my screen.
Let me see if I can fix that here.
In the meantime, I'll mention that Amanda and the county staff has posted all the documents that Angie referenced on the county website. So if you search Kitsap County Planning Commission under Google search, click on it and go to where the meetings are for the Planning Commission. All the documents are right there, easy to click and review.
Would it be easier, Miss Amanda, to share the PowerPoint from your side?
Yeah, let me go ahead and get that up and going. And then as you start with that, I can try and, I'll just share it through my side. Hold on.
Thank you, Miss Amanda. We can click to the second slide, please. So I shared before the staff and two departments here tonight to present on this topic. we kind of want to just step back and just provide another context of what our role and responsibility is during the update, as well as the review of development applications. So for as Department of Community Development, we are the keepers of the county stormwater manual, as well as the reviewers of that manual as development projects move forward. Departments of Public Works, specifically the Stormwater Division, is the keeper of the county's stormwater assets. And Herrera Environmental Consultants, RKI, Robin is here with us, are the subject matter experts to help deliver that product and update consistent with ecology guidance. Next slide, Ms. Amanda.
Good evening. As Angie said, my name is David Tucker. I'm the Assistant Director of Public Works. Just a little clarity as to why we're updating the stormwater code and the stormwater manual at this particular point in time. So, as we talked about back in May, the Clean Water Act passed by Congress in the 1970s requires the U.S. EPA to come up with a means to limit the amount of pollution that gets into the waters of the United States. They created the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System. Within the state of Washington, they delegated that authority to the Department of Ecology, which is a state agency. The state agency has been developing five-year permits that affect us since 2007. The current permit cycle started July of last year and goes until the end of July in 2024. Within that permit, it requires, it lays down some guidelines as to what regulations we have to have for development of private and public projects, as well as redevelopment of projects, both of those. Those guidelines are what drives our county code, Title 12. What I like to tell people is that Title 12 is where the money is determined. It determines which projects are impacted and what level of mitigation those projects have to go to. The Stormwater Manual is just a toolbox for the engineers to figure out how to build best management practices to satisfy those code requirements. Within the NPDES permit, it requires us to adopt the ecology standard or a manual which is functionally equivalent to that standard. As we mentioned before, changes to the code and the manual, we use the Waters and Resource Policy as guidance. For this particular case, most of the changes we're making are simply because they're required by the permit. Not a lot of individual jurisdiction changes. Go to the next slide, please. This is yours, Angie.
What's changed from Title 12 as well as the manual? Most of these changes are seeing about four basic themes. They created a more user-friendly online version of the manual, which once we have go through the legislative process, that online manual will be made available. We reorganized and cleaned up bad references, broken links, etc. We've expanded guidance from ecology on sections that were not clear in previous ecology manuals for Western Washington communities, as well as added a few new additions to content. Next slide, Ms. Amanda.
I'm just going to briefly go through the changes that are being proposed for Title 12. Within this first section of the title, we used to sell paper copies of the manual at cost. We don't provide that anymore, so we're deleting reference to purchasing copies of the manual. Within the section 1208, we're updating a number of definitions to match either the ecology manual or our NPDES permit. And in particular, we're adding two new definitions that are required for us to have from the permit. Section 1210, there's a couple of figures, which I'll talk about here in a minute, with the labeling needs to be fixed, just the number, the figure number. Same thing in 16, those are the same figures that are referenced in 16. In 1220, again, the same figures are talked about and the labels need to be fixed. And this is in 1220 is really the biggest change that we're proposing within this that affects the cost of doing development. Within our permit, we're required to change redevelopment standards for commercial and industrial developments. In that, if the improvement that's being proposed is 50% of the existing project site value, then the site has to mitigate not only new impervious surfaces, but also replaced. It's a slight difference from the current standard. The current standard is about 50% of the existing site. And the difference between a project site and a site is the project site is only the area that's being developed, but the site is the entire legal property. So if somebody was developing only a portion of their property, the 50% would be applied to just the portion they're changing, whereas the old standard, it applied to the entire site. So it's a little bit more restrictive. And again, that is directly out of our permit. Go to the next slide, please. A couple of sections within between 1220 and 1230, we're updating some terminology. In most cases, they have to do with the term best management practice and different types of facilities for consistency with the manual to make sure it's clear that we're talking about the same thing. In section 1236, which is about the stormwater management program, I made sure that source control is clear, it applies to existing development. And then in 1240, which is the fee section for the stormwater program, clarified that drainage systems were stormwater drainage systems. To the next slide, please. So those are all the Title 12 changes. As you can see, there's not a lot of change within the code itself. The only one that's really significant from a cost of development was that one in 1228 I talked about for redevelopment. For the manual, I'm gonna cover the changes between what we talked about last time we were with you in our first draft and what we've changed now with the second draft you're seeing. Within the entire manual, anytime we talk about section, when referring to the county code, that was removed for consistency. Within the chapter one, we had the old permit date range in there, the 2013 to 2018 permit, and we've updated that for the 2019 to 24 permit. Within chapter four, 4.2, there's a figure that has that language I talked about before, about 50% of the value of the property. That's being updated to be consistent with the county code. There's some clarification in the low impact development section, making sure people refer to table 4.3 when they're evaluating whether or not to use a BMP and whether it can be used on their site. And then within section 4.2, there was a mistake referring to the wrong section of the manual that's been updated. One thing I may add, I didn't say before, all these changes are clarified by being highlighted in a blue or kind of a teal color, so it's a little easier for people to find what's changed between draft one and draft two. Go to the next slide, please. In volume two of the manual, just made some grammatical change or fix in section 1.2.2.4. And chapter four made some clarifications for the minimum pipe size to make sure it was clear the pipes, when installed, could be no less than 0.5% in grade, as well as making sure that we updated to allow a little bit longer sections for pipes that have solid lids for 300 feet. Chapter five clarified that the health district guidelines take precedence over any other guidelines. So if those were to change or there would be conflicts, that the health district setbacks are the priority. And under the infiltration section, added clarification to make sure people check Appendix G, which is how to conduct a feasibility for infiltration. On figure 5.1, there were some contradictory language in there that was removed to make sure that the setbacks listed were the correct setbacks. For the next section, please. For tanks, it's traditional to have a buoyancy check on a tank to make sure the groundwater won't force the tank to rise up. In certain circumstances, the default calculations may not be applicable for a manufacturer, so just make sure that the designer uses the most stringent between the manufacturer or the county standard to make sure we're as safe as possible with that. Chapter 8, we went back to the critical drainage maps and we started at the 2016 version. We haven't expanded any area, but we have removed the Gamblewood, Edgewater, Miller Bay Estates area, and we made the Manchester area a little bit smaller. All those changes were because we've done infrastructure improvements in those areas that remove the reason for those being critical drainage areas. All the other areas are pretty much consistent to what we had in the 2016 manual.
So as it relates to kind of the tentative schedule moving forward, as mentioned earlier, this is the second Planning Commission work study. Our first one was on May 19th over the first draft stormwater design manual, as well as background context. Our goal tentatively for moving forward in the legislative recommendation process of the Planning Commission is July 7th for a public hearing, with August being that time for the Planning Commission to take in consideration the proposal before them, but also any public testimony that has been received to deliberate and ultimately finalize those deliberations and the findings of fact that will be transmitted to the Board of County Commissioners. Once the Planning Commission has completed their review and recommendation process, then we would enter into the Board of County Commissioner process, like many other legislative efforts, with the goal to hit the Board of County Commissioners public hearing efforts in September of this year, moving forward with their deliberation and decision process via ordinance by October. However, that ordinance date, it is our goal to delay the effective date of that ordinance so we can take opportunity to train not only internal staff of the nuances between the 2016 Stormwater Design Manual and Code versus the proposal that will move forward in the process itself. That also be courtesy extended to external parties, including engineers, Kitsap Building Association, and any others that would like to get up to speed on what would be effective become the new year. So that we wanted to provide an opportunity for the Planning Commission again to ask questions, clarifications on the second draft, and spur kind of conversation moving forward.
Okay, commissioners, any questions or comments? Commissioner Shattuck.
Yes, thank you. I really appreciated the matrix you put together, the comments from the KBA. I thought that was helpful. And one of the comments that I was a little surprised about was the reference to performance bonds to take care of making sure that, retention detention pond is properly put together. Why don't we want to have a bond that ensures that actually gets completed and there's some money available to make it happen if the developer doesn't put it together? The comment I saw in the matrix was that this is surety bonds don't work, and so that's the sense was that's out of the manual now.
Commissioner Shattuck, do you recall which comment is? I have the comment matrix open on my computer. I'm just trying.
Yeah, it's comment number 16 on the matrix, dealing with section 1.5.3, and the question from the member of the public was. Apparently, performance surety bonds have been removed as a mechanism to make sure that stormwater facilities get built rather than saying, nope, contractor, you got to stay there for 3 years until this gets done.
Mr. O'Leary, can you respond to that based on our department's experience?
Good evening, everybody. Sean O'Leary, Development Service and Engineering Supervisor. Mr. Shattuck, Planning Commissioner, the bonds in past experience with the Department of Community Development have been difficult, to say the least, in working with contractors, developers who have requested bonds for both public and private developments. We have struggled in trying to call those bonds when that developer contractor unfortunately did not or was not able to finish the work. And so it has been Public Works lead to help us in regards to what we do accept for bonding and what we don't. A project that comes in and is showing as public roads and a public stormwater system, meaning that the county will maintain, we do allow a bonding mechanism because that is a public entity and the public works department will want to take over that. It's when they're shown as private roads or private storm, then that becomes an issue of, well, who would take the bond and that money, and then who would actually build that and finish that project. So the private entities no longer accept those, and we have not been accepting those. Does that help answer the question, sir?
Yeah, it does. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll mute now.
Great. Any other questions or comments? Commissioner Galloway?
Yeah, I was just wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more on the threshold, the 50% you said of the value. What is that? Is that assessed value? Is that construction value? What can you maybe dive into that a little bit more?
Mr. Tucker, do you want to take a stab at that one?
Sure, I'm going to read real quick the code, make sure I'm giving you the right information here. Just 1 second.
And just explain what the change was, I guess, a little bit. It sounded like it was 50% of the entire site before, but now it's only 50% of the impacted area. Did I hear that correctly?
You did.
Okay. So if I have a 5-acre site and I want to, it's developed, it's 50% developed or whatever that is, and I want to add, you know, some developable area, you're only looking at the area that's impacted at that time. It's not the entire 5-acre piece. It's maybe the 1 acre.
It only applies to commercial and industrial projects, and it only applies to if you're redeveloping the site. So if, for example, if there was a building on the site with maybe some parking around it and it was like 30 or 40 years old and you wanted to get rid of that building and maybe change the area around it, that's when it would apply. It would only apply to the areas that you're changing. But if it was, if it exceeded 50% of the excess value of that area, which likely it would because it was an old building, then you would have to mitigate not only the new impervious, but also the replaced surfaces, which is a little higher standard than what we do now, which is 50% of the entire site, which would include any other buildings on the site that you weren't touching.
And that's a direct reflection of the changes in the ecology permit?
Yes, it's in our minimum standards we have to apply based on the permit.
And one other quick question on the, kind of picking up on Commissioner Shattuck's question about bonding, what is the mechanism, I guess, once the facility, say a stormwater facility, is built by private or public, for maintaining that system to county, you know, to state, Department of Ecology, or county standards for the life cycle of that infrastructure? In other words, if a storm detention pond gets built and it's 5 years from now that the landowner or the developer hasn't maintained it, what is the mechanism the county has to go enforce that, to bring that to current to bring that into code or compliance.
Sure. It would fall under the civil enforcement section of the county code, which is how we enforce all land use and other issues. So essentially, if it's a privately maintained system, one of our inspectors would go out and meet with the property owner and inspect it. If there's something that needed to be fixed, let them know what that was, arrange a time to come back later, maybe a month or so later, make sure it was done. If it isn't done, then there's an escalating, the county code talks about an escalation of letters, and then finally it can go all the way to court to have it done.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Okay, I'm not seeing or hearing any from my colleagues, so I've just got a couple. Dave, could you clarify a little bit, make sure I heard you correctly, in regarding on the map and removal of, for example, Edgewater, Miller Bay Estates, did you say that's a result of improved infrastructure over the years?
Yes, we've done projects in those areas that we've taken off the map to try to mitigate the problems that were causing those to be critical drainage areas. And we've also, so we don't consider those to be problem areas anymore, that a private developer would have to do something different if they were to develop in that area.
Okay, and how many system failures have we had since the last update? Do we know?
Could you define what you mean by a
system? Yeah, that is pretty broad, is it? I just wanted to get a general idea of our compliance. For example, as you were addressing earlier, maybe you could answer that too. Has the county legal department had to collect on a bond or force legal compliance in court?
Generally, what I'm involved with is the maintenance of systems, and we get very high, maybe about 90% of the systems are in great shape when we show up, and we don't have a high instance of having to go to court on them. So it's not a regular thing that we have to do. Most people are very good at keeping their systems working properly.
Okay, great. And then the last thing, just in general, how many staff hours? I don't need an exact, I just want to get a general sense of how much staff time and how many staff members have had input. Not so much on the title changes, but the stormwater manual itself, because you gave a general, the key changes to us, but the rest of us obviously have looked at the matrix you provided, as Commissioner Shattuck mentioned in detail, which is very helpful. But going through the document itself, the actual manual is over it's close to 300 pages. There's a lot of, there are a lot of changes, although a lot of them are corrections and additions, small things. But overall, it's a big document and there's a lot for us to absorb in a short amount of time. So I wanted to get an idea of how much time you guys put into it, getting it up to this point. And now we've got a pretty short window to evaluate it and make recommendations so that you can move to the next step to the county commissioners.
Well, we had a consultant do the vast majority of the work. So we have to check what they billed us for as far as hours go, but vast majority of the work was done by Herrera and Associates, along with Robin from KRI. And then the county, as products would come out, we would review them. So each of us would put in a couple hours each time a product would come in. So I'd have to go back and look to give you a better idea. But there's probably the people on this call now, plus a couple other people, we probably put in 20 to 25 hours a piece at least.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. Perfect.
And that also includes internal review by the roads division within Public Works, as well as they move forward in capital projects, as they too are required to comply with the design manual and code.
And I know at a previous meeting, when I asked about how much of it is required by Department of Ecology, the state, federal, et cetera, I wanted a ballpark from you, and you told me about 90% mandatory, 10% optional. And I don't want to create any extra staff time, and it might help the commission too, at least it would for me, looking at that multi-page matrix with all of your changes, obviously corrective edits and stuff, probably not going to spend a lot of time there, but for anything that's significant, I wouldn't want to make recommendations of perhaps changing something if it's part of the 90% that's mandated by the state of Washington or the federal government. So is there any way to know, looking at your matrix, as to what can be changed or what's flexible?
Let me look at the matrix real quick and I can let you know.
Okay. And again, I don't want to create any extra staff time and don't need another matrix, et cetera. I just don't want all of us, if we were to select an issue that was of importance to the Planning Commission, that we chase that and to find out that this is something that's mandated. Again, going back to about the ratios you gave us, about 10% of it is flexible.
Mr. Tucker.
So are you referring to the summary of changes as your matrix you're talking about?
No, I'm talking in the matrix you put together. It's probably 9 or 10 pages. It has the first version and then the second with all the changes you've made.
That's the summary of key changes.
Mr. Is it the summary? Is that the title? Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Although the other option is too, if one of us has an issue about it, obviously, if you're participating in the meeting, you can easily tell us, hey, that's an area that we really can't make any significant change because it's a mandatory requirement. That might be the easiest way to handle it because I don't want to send the staff back looking through that matrix, figuring out what can we change, what can we not change. So,
anything in the manual that has to do with our permit process? Ecology doesn't tell us how to do the permit process. They just tell us we have to have a permit process. So anything in the manual that refers to the permitting process, it's something that we created locally. Oftentimes it's other parts of the county code, like Title 21 may have impacts, but that's all local and doesn't really impact the permit.
Okay, great, that's helpful, thank you.
When we get to the section about source control, there were a couple of source control best management practices that we've made local amendments to for clarity.
Okay.
In one case, Ecology's best management practice for mobile washing allows local jurisdictions to have a method for someone to discharge that water straight to the ground. We deleted that because we don't have a method for people to discharge, wash water directly to the ground. So we made a couple of changes that are similar to that. You may think that's local discretion, you may not. Oftentimes, Ecology will say, or if there's a local program that's, different, you can do that. Most of the time, we don't have that local program. So we deleted that to make sure it's clear to the user there isn't another alternative.
And then the last thing I have, I know the entire commission hasn't seen the Kitsap Alliance's letter. You probably haven't even had a chance to look at it yet, but I would like to explore later, kind of get a general time frame. Stormwater is important, but I am curious, how much is this adding to the permitting process? In Mr. Palmer's letter, he suggested that some of the projects are adding an additional 6 months to complete because of the approval process. And so it'd be nice to kind of get a general idea of how much is stormwater adding on to projects that may not otherwise have it. For example, I think Commissioner Shattuck mentioned in a previous meeting that because of the county policy, water is a resource, that the entire area is included, but there could be areas that are not included. So I just would like to have a general idea of, in general, how much additional time is added going through the stormwater process approval.
Sure, Sean or someone, community development could give you that data.
Okay.
Yes, Commissioner Elias, and let us huddle and take a look as a team of the Mr. Palmer's comments.
Okay.
And respond back formally.
Yeah, that'd be great. And please don't put a lot of staff time into it. Just want a general educational moment to try get an idea of from your experience as what it's been. I don't need specific data. Okay. Great. Any other questions or comments from the commission? Commissioner Shattuck, did you have your hand up? I couldn't quite see. Okay, go ahead.
I found it. Again, in my review, I think that was what really was helpful with the comments from the public and your remarks. You looked at those and you see 90% really are, hey, that's a great comment, but sorry, it's a DOE or national requirement, can't do anything about it. And so I think you're correct. It looks to me like our discretion would be to say, what do we apply it to? We've gone further in Kitsap County than we actually have to because of water as a resource, is what we've heard from staff. And then second, how can we streamline the permitting process, like the bond issue? That's something that we as a county have made a decision on. But yeah, it's a frustrating process because I don't think we do have much input on substance.
Great, thank you. Any other questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, we'll move to the next agenda. If you can remind the public too, I know you went over our process, but when's our next presentation and public hearing again?
We are looking at targeting a public hearing before the Planning Commission on July 7th. So that is a tentative date. We will formally notice that public hearing, and again, the materials that the Planning Commission have right now, as well as the public on the second draft, that will not be changing. We would want to go through the recommendation process with the Planning Commission before making any additional edits. As again, as you will hear in a comment in the use table, version control.
Okay, and I see Commissioner Beam.
Question, would this be an appropriate time to hear from Mr. Palmer if he was talking stormwater?
Well, we haven't opened up the public hearing yet, so it'd be the same thing like we talked about a general comment. I guess we could listen to him, and then he would have to present that to us again if he chose to during the public hearing.
Yes, sir, I understand, but we're about to move into use tables, and if he wants to talk, this would appear to be a good time to allow him to.
Yeah, well, I asked him during general public comment, and he said he wanted to withhold comment till the public hearing, but I'm certainly open to asking him again. Amanda, could you open his microphone and we'll ask him?
Sure.
Great.
Mr. Palmer, you should be able to unmute yourself now.
Okay. I have a question, and it relates to the NPDES permit process. Does Kitsap County still have a 1 acre exemption?
No, that was taken out a long time ago, Mr. Palmer.
Was that the 2008 update, Mr. Tucker? Because that was prior to 2016, our current manual, if I remember.
And when we updated the code for the permit that started in 2007, any regulatory guidance we had that was above or more restrictive than what was required by the permit required us to keep that in place. We kept those sorts of things in place until the next update, and that guidance wasn't there anymore. So we removed some of those things that were more restrictive than what was in the permit. So it probably was done in 2016 when we took some of that out, because it was duplicative of what the ecology standard was.
Great, Mr. Palmer, any other questions or comments?
Not for now, I'll defer until later.
Great, thank you, appreciate your being here tonight. Okay, staff, commissioners, any other comments? Okay, seeing and hearing none, thank you very much to Dave and the rest of the staff, and we look forward to seeing you at the next meeting. Okay. Item H, work study 2019-2020 zoning use table update. Darren Gurney, welcome.
Thank you. If you give me a moment, Amanda, am I good to go on the screen?
I am going to try again here. Yeah, actually, I'm sorry, Angie. Apparently, Darren will be just fine. It's just you that can't share the screen.
Sorry of my life.
Should be good.
So thank you for validating that.
Okay. So I am sharing the screen. Can everybody see?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I need to. There we go. Got taught that little trick right there today. So, for the record, Darren Gurney, Kitsap County Department of Community Development, and lead planner for the zoning use table update. This is a second work study that is following the June 2nd work study that we held 2 weeks ago. This session, we actually had a press release go out recently that has garnered a little bit more attention to the project. So we're going to run through a couple of those initial slides again to orient everybody to the project. I know Planning Commission has heard these a couple of times, so I'll just go into it here. So what it is that we're updating is zoning use tables to modernize, streamline, and correct discrepancies primarily for urban areas, the urban growth areas, limited areas of more intense rural development. And that acronym is pervasive in a lot of county documents, the LAMRDs, rural commercial, rural industrial, and mineral resource overlay zones. So you'll notice that it does not include the rural residential protection, those kind of zones. Those are included in this update, only in the context of new uses and where we lump and split uses out. This project also includes a reorganization of the use table footnotes. That's to reduce surprises during permit review process. The biggest part of this update is updating the categorical land uses. That includes pretty much everything that we're going to be talking about, which is revising permit reviews required, adding and removing or modifying definitions. We'll get into those a couple of those definition examples of how we change things up here towards the end of this presentation. We also are clarifying development standards in this project. And part of this is to ensure consistency and predictability across the sections of code. If you've used our code, you know that there are some inconsistencies that can present problems when you are moving a project through the permit process. Again, this project does not include updates to creating new development standards for existing uses, such as setbacks, density allowances, height, parking standards. You will see that some of those items are addressed when we have a new use that is being brought forward. So our general goal and policy guidance, as we've mentioned often, outreach and early often, that is a key component to a successful project. We have done that starting last year. So this has been a very large outreach project so far. We plan to continue that all the way through the end of the process. Coordinating with jurisdictions, the tribal jurisdictions, as well as the cities, we are coordinating with them as well. You'll see in the definitions that we actually use some city definitions as our base language and have modified them a little bit to gear it towards the county code. Removing the barriers to investment, that is a common theme that we've been promoting as part of this project. Prioritizing the primary use of a zone. So if it's a residential zone, allow residential uses. Commercial zone, allow commercial uses. But at the same time, support a mix of uses to allow communities to develop partially with a market demand used to develop in our zones, but we still have to remain true to the zone. And again, reorganizing development regulations. So instead of a plethora of footnotes at the end of a use table that's already complex, we incorporate those into a single chapter, and that helps with our goal and policy to have our regulations simplified. So last meeting, we ran into a couple of items where we wanted to express that they are kind of items of a parking lot where we're capturing the comments. And we mentioned that some of the changes may be outside of the scope. A good example of that one is accessory dwelling units in rural locations and the permissibility of those. So we are tracking those. We're documenting them during this process. You will also remember that on March 3rd, we had a work study session that included a large document of preliminary feedback from our entire workup to our draft. And that included a list of parking lot items at the end of that document. So you can refer to that as we move forward in the process to see where we've already discussed some things. And finally, at the end of the Planning Commission review process, we wanted to make sure that the commissioners knew that you can address some of these items, even if the staff comes back saying that it's out of the scope. We can address those in the findings of fact, saying that this is something that the department should address, and that will be conveyed to the Board of Commissioners. So not going to go through the entire project process. That was covered pretty well in depth on the June 2nd meeting. And now that that's in my mind, just a reminder, there is a recorded version of that presentation on the Planning Commission website. So those who didn't get to look into that presentation and watch it as it was occurring, you do have the opportunity to view that through the Planning Commission website. So today, we are going through our resource guides for the second day. The first was the use tables with the permissibilities for each zone, for each use. Today, we are going through the definitions. July 7th, and you'll see that in the next slide, I believe, we're gonna be going through the staff report, department recommendation in its entirety with the additional regulations. And that will prepare us for the review process and public hearings. After that, we go through a revised recommendation from the department and go to the Board of County Commissioners for another public review process and opportunity for the public to comment. So this is just a chronological order of events here. You'll see that we're at the June 2nd, 16th, and July 7th for our study sessions. And we expect to finish and hopefully adopt towards the end of October with some implementation and training occurring as we go along here for an effective date in January of next year. So as I mentioned, here's a slide that we had in the last study session. This June 2nd is the materials that we were going over. It's what's allowed to be built in each zone and the level of permit review that's required. So the administrative conditional use permit, conditional use permit that goes to the hearing examiner, or is it permitted outright in the zone? Today, if you remember, you did not receive your materials for the June 2nd meeting until right before the meeting. That was intended to make sure that we could address some questions up front to reduce the amount of time you needed to review the materials. So today is actually a review of those materials from June 2nd and the definitions that you received about a week ago. So in terms of getting into the definitions and the resource guide, this is going to generally go over what we've done for the definitions. We do understand that Planning Commission does a very good job at doing their homework and reviewing materials. So in that recognition, we're just doing this as a general slide. The definitions, revisions, additions, they are meant to add clarity. A big portion of the use table revolves around these definitions. And if you don't know what your use is, it's not, and it's not defined, the department has to prepare a similar use determination. That can be something that's costly. And we like to avoid those situations if we can by doing, making sure that everything that we have is defined. And a large number of our categorical uses were not defined, are still not defined as the project has not been adopted yet. So we have added definitions for each categorical use. We've made sure there's consistency between code chapters. Examples of that are transitory accommodations and marijuana. Those are in two different chapters where we were referencing backwards to the transitory accommodations and marijuana. We are actually bringing it in and incorporating it into the Title 17 in this project. The terms within a definition being further defined, that is something that you can have a definition, but then you have another term within that definition that needs even more clarity. And that is all in an effort to make sure that it's a predictable and a clearer path as you move forward in a permit process. So that's trying to reduce those surprises that allows people to better predict and plan accordingly with those terms understood. The combined categorical uses, you'll notice from the tables that we explained last time that you have uses rolling up into a single use. Where you find an example of this categorical use with this kind of effect, you have a couple of examples. One is general office or general retail in the commercial uses. You have a couple of, let me find my notes here. So construction office and management, the definition adds engineering and construction firms, banking institutions. So those are explicitly stated in the definition. There are other definitions that uses are rolled into them where we are able to interpret it to include that. The other example that I would give, which is a very complex part of this, is our residential uses. The family living residential use category, that is covering primarily those single family dwelling units, multiple family dwelling units that are given a separate kitchen space. Everything that you need to live is in a unit within a larger structure or as a standalone structure. Whereas the group living is more of your convalescent home, congregate care, dormitories. Those kind of categorical uses are rolled into the group living. But each of those also include a separate definition of their own. So with these kind of explanations coming forward, I'd like to go into a discussion. I wanted tonight's meeting to be more of a discussion format to address questions and clarify anything from the two sets of materials you've received to date. I would like to start with the definitions that you received. A lot of questions from the use table, at least from what our internal discussions have yielded, a lot of our questions were answered by the definitions discussion. So that's where I'd like to start tonight. And with that, I would like to turn it over to the chair to answer any questions that the commission may have.
Okay, commissioners, any questions or comments? I know at our previous meeting, Commissioner Shattuck, Allen, and Murphy addressed the specific topic was the ADUs, but the general overall issue was policy changes that were not part of the scope of the project. And I had sent an email out to the commissioners noting that I was, that the week prior to the Planning Commission meeting, I meet with the staff and go over the agenda and plan the meeting. But we'd like to get some direction from the commission specifically about these kinds of, we'll call them hot button issues, whether it's an ADU or whatever it might be. And specifically to Commissioner Shattuck and Allen and Murphy, who's not here, if you're okay with the current plan that, as Darren mentioned, the commission itself can, even if the staff has a recommendation otherwise, the commission itself can make a recommendation and submit that to the Board of County Commissioners. Another alternative is we come about these various issues during our process. If it happens to be one of these hot button issues, we could create kind of a parking lot of issues that we put together, retain that list, and then after we're done with this specific project, we can come back and address those issues. So we'd like to get an idea from you how you would like to proceed. Commissioner Shattuck, and sorry, can we, oh, that's right, we've got to keep the visual in front of us. I can't see everybody.
Right.
Let me so see.
I can stop sharing for a moment if you'd
like. Yeah, if you could, because and what we'll have to do if we have a shared screen is I can't see everybody, so feel free to interject. As long as we're not talking over each other, we're okay. Commissioner Shattuck.
Okay, I'd like to just to address a couple of things. I look at this as an opportunity. We've said that we know we want to get the use table done, but while we're here, let's get the things done that are most important. I want to challenge the scope issue. We, throughout this process, have, in the use table, made all kinds of changes to the rural, the zones. Here we address adult family homes in the zone. We address wildlife shelters because of what's going on at Port Gamble. Hey, there's that issue. Let's fix it while we're in the use table. We address event facilities. We address private and public schools. We address farmers markets. We address garage sales. All of those in the rural zone, okay? And those are good. It's good because we're here. Let's fix it, okay? But we've got a huge issue, and we're putting our blinders on. Oh, no, we don't want to look at affordable housing. I took a quick look at the hearing examiner process for this year. Since the start of the year, there's been 7 hearing examiner events in 2020. There were 15 items that were under consideration by the hearing examiner during that time. 11 of them were ADUs. The vast majority of the hearing examiner's work is with ADUs, okay? All of those ADUs were approved. Very, very few of them had any public participation. The ADU applications in many cases were over a year old. It took, one was complete, absolutely ready to go in September of 2019. The hearing examiner approved that in May, the end of May of 2020. That is a process that doesn't make any sense. It's a waste of your staff resources. It's a waste of the hearing examiner's time. It's a waste of the taxpayer, of the homeowner's money. And so we're saying, oh, we don't want to look at that. And the reasons we heard last week or last meeting, because one, well, you know, we want to make it kind of hard because that helps promote urban growth, urban focus, as opposed to rural focus. We want our focus on that because people might be upset about it. Just like wildlife shelters, just like farmers markets, we're here. Let's address this issue. That's the most important issue right now that we've got in front of us. So that's my pontification, is trying to hide behind, oh, wait, it's beyond the scope. I don't think that sells with all the other stuff we're doing. And I can't think of a good reason not to say, let's get rid of this process that is slowing down affordable housing, make it more user-friendly, make it cheaper, make it easier, make it more efficient, which is what we're supposed to be doing. I'm over. Done.
Thank you, Commissioner Shattuck. You make a very compelling case. Commissioner Allen, did you want to comment?
Yes, I do. I want to echo what Commissioner Shattuck said. I have the same level of passion for taking this issue on. I think I have a kind of a unique perspective, having been the hearing examiner in Kitsap County for a number of years, and having heard case after case after case of people that want to build an ADU, not just for affordable housing, but now in the age of COVID, maybe to have elderly, you know, family members come and live where, you know, it's where it's safer. I think that we're kind of on the precipice of a whole new construct in how people get around and move and interact with each other. So I just want to add that nuance in. I when I would hear these cases, you know, these were families that really were very interested, you know, interested in having mom or dad or you know, a relative come and use that ADU. And in the city of Redmond, where I, you know, was on the city council for a number of years, you know, that was a huge frustration that there was just too much process to be able to build one of these. They're expensive enough, the construction costs alone. But when you add a complicated permitting process on top of it, it's cumbersome. So I would ask that you put this in the parking lot so that at the end of our deliberations, we can come back to it. We can see what the consensus of the Planning Commission is here and perhaps have a way to proceed in the findings and conclusions that reflect this, you know, this, I think, very, very important issue. So that would be my preferred way of handling it. And thank you, Mr. Chair and staff, for identifying a number of alternatives to give us a path forward.
Great, thank you. Any other comments? Commissioner Mall?
Yeah, I have a comment that I think it relates to the ADU question, but is also kind of a general comment. I'm coming at this more from an environmental perspective and personally just from a quality of life perspective. And so I don't have the same developer perspective that a lot of people have. So I'm not 100% sure that I am understanding correctly, but I am hearing that the conditional use permit requirement versus the ACUP requirement is imposing a cost difference that is prohibitive in a lot of cases, and that's problematic. From an environmental and a quality of life perspective, I think that it is important to have certain levels of review in place so we make sure that people don't do things that we kind of all agree are not ideal for our community. So I wonder if the problem is not so much in the fact that we want to give extra consideration to certain types of development. Maybe the problem is that the conditional use permit is just too cumbersome in certain situations, and maybe the solution is more in looking at ways to reduce the impact of that permit process itself. And so in, you know, in situations like an ADU in a rural area, or in situations, I think someone brought up the idea of someone with a farm who wanted to be able to have weddings on it frequently and not have to go through a really expensive, cumbersome process. Maybe there are situations where there could be a simplified kind of shortcut or a scholarship sort of situation or fee waiver so that someone could glance at an application and say, oh yeah, this is a no-brainer. We don't need to go through the whole process with this, versus a situation where, like, okay, this neighborhood really doesn't want a massive wedding venue in the middle of the neighborhood. It's not appropriate. That does need to go through the whole process. My point is I don't want to allow inappropriate development just because the process is too cumbersome in certain situations. Maybe the idea is to look at the process and not to look at necessarily the zoning in every single case.
Great, thank you, Commissioner Ball. Any other comments? Commissioner Beam?
If we do establish this parking lot process, what will we do, and how do we address ADUs? In other words, what's the process we're going to use to do that?
Right. And that's, I wouldn't say it's complicated, but we don't know what the issues are going to be, right, as we move forward with the definitions and the specific policies of the zoning use table. So it'd be something going in. We may not know exactly how we're going to proceed. ADUs might be different than some other part of the project. And again, I think it comes back to, if we have these, and I'll just for reference, call them hot button issues. It's an issue of, does the commission want to come back later and address it, or do you want to address it as part of this process and then make it a planning commission recommendation as part of a change in the zoning code update?
Well, if the aspect of it is affordable housing, making ADUs available, which are all done on personal choice of the property owner, makes sense to make that as easy as we can.
I think we're in a process issue here. We want to identify the hot button issues that, you know, right now aren't being addressed. And we want to, you know, the creation of the parking lot is to allow us to keep that in mind. Now the question is, how do you bring that issue out of the parking lot and it becomes a something to be discussed and, you know, voted on whether we're going to pursue it or not.
Right. So we obviously have several alternatives which might complicate the issue at hand, but as Commissioner Shattuck identified too, if not now, when? The only issue related to that, it would be my preference to address it now, but we also don't want to derail the project. And I heard what Commissioner Shattuck said, but I also remember last year when we put the sideboards on this thing, that's what we established, and now we're looking at expanding that. And that's okay too. We've just got to be prepared as we move forward through the process. And ADUs is probably one of the most hot button topics anyway, because I worked with the former director in developing a new ADU ordinance, because we have at that time, I don't know what it is today, but a huge share of the ADUs that are in existence are not permitted. So the idea was to bring people into code compliance. One of the challenges is it can be cumbersome. It is intense. And as Commissioner Shattuck, it's funny you mentioned that, Commissioner Shattuck, that you had reviewed the hearing examiner's decisions. I did too. I just looked at a bunch of them the other day, and it is. It's a very intensive process. But at the same time, if that's our window, the county's window of opportunity to get it approved, because I think if the alternative is the two extremes, and we'd have to wait and see through the appeal process, because I pretty much guarantee if we were to make major changes to it, that the environmental groups and the tribes in particular would file an appeal, again, back to increasing density. And if that's a challenge that the commission's wanting to do, I say go for it. And it's up to the county commissioners just to decide whether they want to pursue that. But I also understand the argument too about putting it into a parking lot, because you don't want to just move these hot button issues over there and then not take any action in the future. And so actually, I kind of have the same question too for staff. If we were to create this parking lot, whether it's ADUs or any other particular issue, what's going to be our mechanism to move those forward, other than having to wait for the right time? That brings me back to Commissioner Shattuck's comment at a previous meeting about whether we ought to be looking at site specific every year. And Commissioner Shattuck noted, well, if you don't have that process in place, you have to wait for the next comp plan review. You know, if you happen to miss a window, you don't want to have to wait 8 years and until your next chance. So you want to give people that opportunity.
If I may, Mr. Chair, for the record, this is Darren Gurney. And if for some reason you can't hear me, my computer doesn't work as well when the camera is on. So if you can't hear me, please let me know. To address a couple of the questions posed here, the parking lot is something that we can use as a mechanism to inform the board about topics that we feel are important and that they can prompt us to consider moving forward. The scope of the project, the reason why we keep referring to the scope is that we have put this out to the public as something where we are removing barriers in urban areas. And those the investments that we're trying to foster are in the urban areas, the Lammards. When we get into the rural, that is a different discussion. Yes, we have touched the rural zones based on the fact that we are introducing new uses. We've added some nomenclature to some of the definitions. Mr. Shattuck mentioned wildlife shelters. So we're revising for clarification. And yes, that is going to impact the rural zones, but we've been very clear that the only changes we would expect in the rural zones are those that are based on lumping, splitting uses or new uses, and not the existing uses and whether we're addressing permissibility on those. I do hear and understand, and I have listened to all of the affordable housing discussions as well. So I definitely can empathize with the desire to go there. If we go through the route and the Planning Commission chooses to say that ADUs should go to a different permissibility in rural zones, that is something the Planning Commission has the discretion to do. But that is something that, you know, the department would have to take into consideration when we move our final recommendation to the board.
Okay. Commissioner Beam?
Well, I keep going back to this basic problem. We need to develop in the next 10 years about 25,000 units of housing. We need to find a way so that we can make housing more affordable, and having people build on their own land for a purpose, we ought to be trying to make that easy. I understand rural and all the rest of that, but in the rural, you've got 12, 10, 20 acre lots. Putting an extra thing on that doesn't seem to be a major problem. But we've got to address this affordable housing. We've got to make it easier to build and to do so and do it affordably.
Okay, I'm hearing four and maybe a majority that would like to open it up in our process and basically be able to address any issue as part of this process. I'm wondering if there's a way to merge these two together. And is it possible when we get to that point after public testimony to approve and recommend the zoning code with whatever amendments there are, and then have some optional amendments to that, whether it's ADUs or the other issues, so that they're pulled out and they're separate? So the county commission and staff, for example, if the staff has a different recommendation, it's kind of pulled out and not part of the master document. Can you bifurcate the two and still be part of the same process, but still have all of it moving forward?
So I will ask my colleagues to chime in if they hear me miscommunicate this. So with us are Liz Williams, Dave Ward, the director Jeff Remack, and assistant director Angie Silva. So if I get this wrong, let me know. But the process in which you're moving forward, you would put out a recommendation to the department. We then communicate that recommendation to the board.
Correct.
If that recommendation includes ADUs, then that it could be that we have two separate recommendations. It just depends. The department may choose to go with it. There is the option, if we don't go forward with ADUs, there's an option to include a minority report saying that we should, if not all the commissioners agree that you should move forward with that. That is an option that the board will then see that. They will also see it in the findings of fact if it's not voted to include changes to the ADUs and rural zones. You can include it in the findings of fact saying that you believe it should be included in the scope of the project. And we can move it forward from there. But the board ultimately will see the findings of fact and the recommendation from both Planning Commission and if it's different from the department.
Okay. Commissioner Shattuck?
I've never seen the commissioners have a whole lot of time telling us that we were wrong. So I don't know why, again, if the the pleasure of the commission is to say, let's have an amendment to change ADUs from a CUP to an ACUP. We make the recommendation and the staff says, well, commissioners, it's not a good idea and here's why. And the commissioners decide, but at least they'll have the input from the planning commission, the citizens that say, geez, this is something that we're here. Maybe we ought to take this now. So I don't think this poses a huge procedural problem. We just make a decision and make a recommendation to the board and see what the board wants to do.
Okay.
So, Commissioner Eliason, if I could.
Yes. Jeff.
So one thing to keep in mind when you're talking about this is all of the public outfacing information gathering, everything we've done has been limited to this scope. So even if you make the recommendation, there is a very good chance that the process would be halted and reset if we looked at it. I'm just saying they will want to go back out to the public even if you do it, because no one showed that this was something on the forecast. No input was asked for this. This was shown actually as something we wouldn't look if we went into the rural and we started talking about this. So keep that in mind, that there's a double-edged sword when you look at it in terms of trying to move forward. It's probably going to reset the process back to actually go back out for public comment. I understand the Planning Commission can make the recommendation that they wish to, and we'll gladly push forward with that, and it does fall with the county commissioners at the end. But I just ask that you look at both sides of it when you look at it. It won't be a case of they're going to just move forward, because there will be questions as to the GMA effects. Are we gonna be challenged on GMA? You know, what are the impacts to that? How does it affect other reasonable measures that we potentially have and people that will want to come and push suit potentially for violation of GMA? It's not just a case of let's do it now. It's kind of something when we talk about that scope, that if we really wanted to get into that, we kind of needed to start with that so that we were taking to everybody and talking to the public, as opposed to something that people from the rural then look at and go, I was interested, I did get a notice, and you told me this wasn't on here. And now all of a sudden it comes out, and ADUs, my neighbor can put an ADU on his property. And some, not everybody in the rural either is living on 5 acres. I mean, there's a majority of them, but there's a lot of plats that exist also out in the rural areas when you look at it, that could suddenly have higher density. So it's, I understand the thought and the process behind it and the desire to move forward, but I don't see it as something that's going to go through cleanly, even if the commission comes and makes a recommendation saying we should open it and ADUs allowed on rural properties. It's more tied to different things.
I think that's a worthwhile discussion.
And one thing that comes to my mind on this is that because of that, because we didn't lead off with that included in the scope of work, we would need to consult with legal counsel to make sure we're not slipping up on our public process here, because we're not leading off with that if it doesn't go through the process correctly, then it just automatically kicks that change back to square one, regardless of the desires of the planning commission or the board. So we need to be careful on that. So I think a consult with legal counsel is in order as well.
Okay, Commissioner Phillips?
I would also point out that, yes, it would be nice to be able to do something now. And as we're hearing, that may not be as doable as we'd like it to be. But at the same time, if we see an issue, you know, that really we feel strongly about in that, then approaching, you know, having our opinion go to the board to say, we didn't, you know, this isn't in this current revision, but we think it needs to be in the next revision. We need to be able, you know, if you can't win the battle today, then plan the battle so that you can get it there eventually. You know, it may not be today, may not be this year, but maybe next year, if we present it well enough, the board will go, yeah, we need to look at this and do that process, kind of like a step two on this.
And Commissioner Phillips, to my thinking, that is the purpose of the parking lot. so that way we don't lose these kinds of important thoughts. If I were a betting man, I would say we are going to have more than just this one issue landing in that parking lot. The use table touches virtually every aspect of county development planning, and there's going to be a lot of issues that will come up that we're not going to be able to address all at once. And so to my thinking, that's the value and the importance of the parking lot, is so that way we can use that as a tool to plan for the future and to go back to the Board of County Commissioners and work with the department leadership to establish priorities for the future.
Right.
Okay. Any other comment?
I agree with what Mr. Ward has said to an extent. I think that the parking lot is a good place to collect these issues now as we go through the process of our deliberations, which we're not doing yet. We still have a lot of discussion to go. But I would appreciate if staff could spend some time at on arrival. We absolutely can't include this in this update. Kind of resolve some of those preliminary questions that revolve around process and whether we can actually, whether if we included this in our recommendation, the board could actually act on it and say, yes, let's do this. So if we can get some of that done, that work done, some of that investigation done between now and when we have a final decision on the findings and conclusions, I think that would be very helpful. I agree with you, Mr. Ward. I think a number of issues are going to end up in the parking lot, some of which will be for another day. I just think you've heard from the commission here that there's a very strong depth of conviction on seeing if there's a path forward in the work that we're doing now to include that particular change. So if you could let us know if it's possible and feasible before we have to come to a vote on it at the end of the day, at the end of this process, that would be greatly appreciated.
That's something we can commit to.
Yeah, we do appreciate the issue that the commission is bringing forward. Don't think we don't, but I don't want to break the process or something, the legalities of it as we're moving forward. So we'll definitely look into that and get back with you.
Okay, any other comment? Okay. I think we've got a path forward. It's a compromise, and I think you have the staff's assurance in mind that just because it's, at least right now, we're calling it the parking lot, but it doesn't mean it's losing significance. As the staff mentioned, we got to spend the time, and I think as Commissioner Allen mentioned, as we hit each one of these topics, staff at some point can address to us, is this something that the Board of County Commissioners can address in the current process through the zoning code, or is this something that needs to be part of a separate process? Okay. Great. Darren, do you want to proceed with the definitions?
Yes, if we could, that'd be great. In terms of where we left off from the presentation, my main goal for the first part of this is just to clarify, answer questions about the definitions, and from there move into the use table from June 2nd and see if there are questions that now have the context of the definitions there to answer some of those concerns or questions. So any questions regarding the definitions, I'd be like to start with those right now, if possible.
Okay, great. Commissioners, any questions? Commissioner Beam?
I brought this up earlier. I really don't like the definition of urban low. It doesn't say anything. Can we look at that? Is that it within our scope?
The definition of urban low would be the purpose statement of the zone.
Yeah.
So that would typically, that is something that is guided by comprehensive plan updates. So changing the language of that zone purpose would actually come through a different process, most likely.
Can we bring it up? I'd just like you to look at what the words actually say and how is it different than urban restricted, urban medium, or urban high? It's all mush.
Is that a document you can easily pull?
Yes, I can. I can actually bring it up just through the internet.
Okay.
Let me see here. With the computer opened up to the camera, it's a different screen. So I'm just making sure I navigate this correctly.
That's a nice.
Is that coming up?
Yes.
Okay. So let me pull that down. And I'm just going to zoom in here for ease of reading. So this is Urban Low.
Right, and it doesn't say anything. It doesn't tell me how it's different than restricted or how it's different than urban medium.
Right, so as I mentioned, this would be something that would go through the comprehensive planning process and updating that to reflect the larger question of the purpose of the zone.
Well, that's the definition, sir.
I believe, Darren, weren't you referring to the list of red line definitions, right? Not that we can't address this issue, but I think we're talking about two different things.
Correct. I was hoping to go through the red line definitions. And I will mention that we are on some of those zones where they are very similar. We are aligning those uses to in the future if we want to align those uses right across the board to like urban low and urban cluster, green belt and urban restricted. That's something where we can align the uses and then through the comprehensive plan update, we can then merge two zones together, but it's not a process we could do right now through a code update.
I'm not proposing to merge anything. I was just wanting to have somebody walking into the process saying, I'm in urban low, what does that mean?
Mr. Beam, if I may, Liz Williams with the Department of Community Development. To kind of piggyback on what Darren is saying here, the purpose of this project, what we're looking at is use permissibility across zones. The purpose statements of those zones is not part of this particular update process, and when that would need to be addressed would be as part of a comprehensive plan amendment process. And so what we are trying to accomplish with this process is taking a look at some of those similarities in the purpose statements of zones. And where it does align, we can make sure that permissibility of uses across those different zones are aligned for a future comprehensive plan update process. So just wanting you to know that as part of this update process, it's something that we are taking a look at. We did recognize as a department that our purpose statements of zones, there are some similarities across them. So that is something that in the future, as part of this update process, we can look at that with the comprehensive plan future update process, if that makes sense.
Well, I'm just having a hard time wrapping my mind around. I'm trying to figure out what uses go into this zone, but I don't have a good definition for what the zone is. So,
sure. So the alignment of permissibility across the zones and the recommendation that is being moved forward right now as part of this amendment process is to try to align uses and permissibility with the current purpose statements of our zones. So where we are seeing existing purpose statements that may be similar, for example, you mentioned urban low and urban restricted. If there are alignments in those purpose statements, what we can look at is the uses in our tables and align the permissibility in those two zones for future consolidation as part of an update process later on.
I'm sort of looking at this as an engineering type process. You know, I've got this use, what bin do I put it in? And why doesn't it fit in this bin or why does it fit that bin? And if I don't have a good definition of the bin, it's hard to figure out which one's going, and I'll drop the subject.
Sure.
Well, I would urge you to keep in mind that this was one of the first things that we brought up with the Planning Commission when we started this effort quite some time ago, several months ago, is that we currently have some zones whose purpose and intent, which are defined in the comp plan, we have some zones who that have very, very similar permissibility. In some cases, they're almost identical, not quite, but almost. And so this raises a question for the Planning Commission and for the Department and for the Board of County Commissioners. If the permissibility of two zones that have different stated purposes, but yet have almost identical permissibility of uses, why do we have two different zones? Why wouldn't we just merge those into one zone? Or the flip side of that question, and keep in mind, I'm not advocating in one direction or the other, but the flip side of that question is, if we have two zones that have two different stated purposes, and yet the uses are almost identical, should we be using this opportunity to adjust those uses so that way the zones are different and better match the stated purpose that we have from in the comp plan? So we can go in two different directions. We can either start to build, rely on those purpose statements and start to distinguish them based on uses, or we can start to align those uses in a way that cues it up for the next comp plan to start to establish a single zone rather than two different ones.
Okay. Darren, would you mind putting up the definitions again? And I don't know how long it would take us if we could just kind of scroll through them. And then if any, because not all of us can pull up the document itself. You don't have to read them or anything. I just thought if we could just briefly scroll through them, and if any one of them catches anybody's attention.
Sure. It's 23 pages, so I can start at the top if you like.
Yeah, I think maybe just a few seconds to each page. Commissioner Shattuck?
Yeah, just after we're starting that process, the only definition that I saw that really didn't help clarify was I had some clients who came in and wanted to do what we're calling an accessory dwelling attached. And what they were told is that to add an accessory dwelling attached, they had to keep the same roof line as the existing structure. And this was a split level home. And so it was kind of like this weird, why do I have to do that? Why can't I do something a little bit different? And so just Darren, on that first, that definition of accessory dwelling unit attached, it has to be directly connected by a minimum of 4 feet to the habitable space. So I'm not quite sure I understand. And is that going to be interpreted also as having to have the same roof line as the existing structures?
That will be something that I have to get back to you about, but that is a good question.
Well, one place where the 4 feet came from was the notion that if at some point in the future you may want to actually be able to connect the primary unit with the accessory unit, and 4 feet gives you enough room to put in a door between the two structures. And that was something that I think originally Commissioner Murphy brought up. Because he had a couple of examples where it brought up this question when it got to permitting, what does connected actually mean? Does it mean connected by a fence? Does it mean connected by a roof line? Does it mean connected by 1 foot of wall or something, or is it something else? So I think where that 4 foot suggestion came from was, if my memory serves correct, was from Commissioner Murphy's suggestion that 4 feet is enough to put a door in that you theoretically can connect those spaces eventually.
That's correct, Dave.
Okay. I look at that last sentence, I'm not quite sure what it means. And alternate configuration shall not be allowed. Alternate to what? Alternate to a minimum of 4 feet connection. I guess that was Darren, of all the definitions, that's the one I try to say, okay, I'm going to the counter and saying, here's what I want to do. I want to have a little side area where mom and dad can live and get into the bathroom to go into the house. And I wasn't sure what the guy or gal at permitting would say.
So could I speak to that, Darren?
Sure, of course.
So this definition is being driven off of a director's interpretation. That's how Aaron, Commissioner Murphy, when he went through it, knew about the 4-foot wall when we're looking at it. It was so that it's intentionally part of the structure or the home for the accessory living quarters. Because what we were running into was we were running into scenarios where a breezeway, the biggest one I saw was a 40-foot breezeway to connect it. So essentially it really was an ADU. Okay. They connected it with a 40-foot breezeway and said, nope, it's part of the house. Well, that kind of went against the intent of the code when we looked at it. We also ran into scenarios where there was a 3-car garage, and then this is on the other side of the garage. So again, not really part of the home when you're looking at the attached dwelling unit. So we're trying to avoid that. That's really what we're trying to do. And I did a director's interpretation on it that kind of showed different configurations. And this is the verbal way of trying to describe that, which obviously we might be a little short on, given the number of questions we're talking about. So I can understand that. Does that help explain what the intent was?
Yeah, it does. Thank you.
Yeah, the intent is the connection of habitable space. So that habitable space part is important. And thank you for reminding me of the garage situation. If you have suggestions for alternative language to help clarify that, we're certainly open to it.
Great. Darren, could you move to daycare? I'm trying to remember from reading through these because I don't have any notes in front of me.
Can I just add, real quick before we move off that, maybe the language there needs to say something more along the lines of connected via a door or a entryway rather than 4 feet. That way that's worded as an architect, that's a little confusing to me, which isn't hard, by the way. I don't know if that would be a better way to word that. Just an idea.
Likewise, if you have suggested wording, knowing what the intent is, if you have suggested wording, we're certainly open to it.
Okay. Actually, could you hit composting first? It might have been under composting before I get to daycare. Let me see if it's there. Yeah. Okay. So I saw this a couple times too, and maybe I'm just haven't figured it out. Composting means any commercial operation. Is there a reason it's defined as commercial and not just composting means any operation? Does there have to be an exchange?
So the categorical use in the use table, mm-hmm. you're typically going to see it as a standalone use. So I believe that comes into play with firewood cutting and topsoil production and things like that.
Okay.
So composting is something where as a standalone use on a property, if the only thing that you're doing is composting and just dumping a whole bunch of green matter, mm-hmm. Then it's something that we wanted to capture.
Okay, not going to apply. Okay, and then go ahead.
To be clear, this is not backyard composting in for residential purposes. This is industrial scale. And I can speak from having lived and worked in one of the other counties on the other side of the water for a long time. These commercial composting facilities are really, really controversial because depending on whether you're downwind of them or not, it can have a definite impact on your quality of life.
Right. Yeah.
So quick question, since we're on composting there, the newest thing in burial is now human composting. Will that follow under that definition?
I will have to look into that.
Good question.
Yeah, that is good. And I think we have one under graveyard too. If you could hit daycare. Let's see if I can refresh my memory what the issue was there.
Okay.
Okay, and that was the change for the 24-hour period, private, other than a private residence. And then we got the new definition, daycare center, home-based. Oh, that's what I want to know. So the six individuals are cared for, is that under state statute or state WAC? Where did the number six come from?
That I would have to look into, since we didn't change the number on that.
It's not a change. Okay. And it could be under licensing regulation. Okay.
Right. And there are a lot of, I think the last session that we had, Dave Ward mentioned that we went through and looked up a litany of different residential care type uses. Mm-hmm. That included daycares and convalescents and all those. And it is a long list, and sometimes it actually conflicts with itself. So, it's something I can look into.
Okay, no problem. And then on the left-hand side, could you scroll down through that real quick rather than the main page?
See, sure.
Yeah, that one.
This one here.
Yeah, it's fireworks. I think there was that change to the fireworks. Firework sales. Okay. Yeah, and I was okay with that one. And the firework sales. And obviously these would just apply, they wouldn't apply to the tribal lands. Okay.
Correct.
Beverage. Okay, if you could keep scrolling on that one. And not that I was going to check it, but I think there wasn't there a grave? No, I guess I missed it.
Cemeteries.
It was cemeteries, not graveyards.
Okay.
Yeah. If you could click that real quick. I wanted to look at that definition.
Will do.
Okay. Funeral. Okay. Yeah, that was the three edition. Okay, great. And then if you wouldn't mind continue scrolling, we're almost halfway there on the left-hand side. If anything jumps out to anybody, as you see the title subject there. Okay. I know we talked a little bit at a previous meeting about garage sales. Could we pull that up real quick? Okay. Offering sale to the general public of over five items of personal property on any portion of a lot that is otherwise used as residential or assessed by the assessor as residential. Okay, and then of course on the table, we'll get into it. Okay.
Yeah, garage sales were actually on my list of things to ask about. I don't know if it's more definition related or use related, but garage sales, firework sales, and farmers markets, all three of those are permitted in almost all residential areas. And I'm just imagining, you know, if my neighbor suddenly opened up a firework sale or a garage sale that happened every single weekend, that would really not be cool. So I'm curious about the intent of those, kind of that set of three, the farmer's market, firework sale, and garage sale.
Okay.
As regular installations rather than just a one-off.
I'm going to let's see here. I'm going to look something up while this is on the screen. So while I'm looking this up, is there another area you'd like me to scroll to in the?
No, but one thing I noticed in there too, helicopter pads. Are we seeing more of those? I mean, other than the commercial pads at the hospital and you know, the fire departments obviously have various temporary landing sites. But I thought that was interesting that we have a new definition of helicopter pads.
Okay, let me. So I'm looking up the other part of your question for the temporary uses real quick. So.
Okay.
Just quick comment about the helicopter pad. And that is in the aviation industry, they are moving towards electric helicopter taxis now. Mm. So there will be, you know, possible uses for that, especially when you look in our area where a flying taxi helicopter makes sense because you can get across the sound in less than 10, 15 minutes.
Interesting. Thank you.
So when you're ready, I actually have a response for the other question here. So no. I'm going to move back to the fireworks piece. So farmers market, that one is that definitely has some leeway in terms of where you're allowing those garage sales, because you have, it's supposed to be on a residential assessed property. It's supposed to have a residence on it, so that you're not just building a garage and then selling things out of there like a small retail component. Fireworks stands, that is one that specifically is coming from another title in our code, and that is 1048.04.014, so firework permits. If you scroll all the way down through this language, it references RCWs, but this last sentence here, it talks about the fact that they're allowed to be from structures in those zones where commercial or industrial activities are authorized. So if a commercial activity is authorized in those residential zones, that's where you saw the permissibility carry across.
Okay.
So that's something we can look into and discuss with legal to see if we have the authority to say whether or not that was just a general carry across. So we can look into whether that can be changed from land use standpoints.
Okay, that makes sense. For the garage sales, my understanding when we talked about garage sales before was that that the intent was to make some kind of distinction between the occasional, like once a year kind of garage sale and people who kind of have these just ongoing standing garage sales that would be less desirable in a neighborhood. So the permit, is there already a permit process that controls that? Or how would this work functionally if my neighbor, or say I just suddenly wanted to like have my garage open every single Saturday?
So the intent behind that is if we were going to require a permit, it would be something temporary. This is primarily one that we're stating a definition. So we're clearly defining this so that we can also come into a situation and say, no, you're actually setting up a retail operation. This isn't a garage sale. Mm-hmm. So part of the definition is clarifying that between two uses. And in terms of acquiring a permit to get a garage, to do a garage sale, that's something that we can discuss when we get into the regulations of how these things are regulated. So I believe where they're allowed, they're permitted outright. We can also add on to that it only has to go through a temporary permit process, or we can do something different. But I will have to talk to our permit teams to figure out the exact way we can do that. Is there a
set of permits for garage sales?
I didn't think we wanted to. So.
Okay, can you move to, and we should come back to that because that's interesting topic. The group homes, I'm wondering under group homes and secure facilities, because I do not know the status of the changes and the litigation. I'm wondering if there's any, and I'll use the word significant, changes in the definitions that would be problematic to either side, either the proprietors of those group homes or the neighbors.
To be honest, I have to lean on our legal team for this one. In terms of the questions about this specific definition, okay, and whether that would impact those.
Okay, fair enough.
But this has, just to be very clear, our prosecutor's office has gone through these in
very fine detail. So these do reflect a review from that side of the county.
Okay.
So and likewise, I think we described in an earlier meeting, we did sit down and go through these definitions with our Human Services Department as well, and they provided some clarity for us as to how the state and even the federal government regulates these different types of group living facilities, because there's a lot of nuance to this, and some of it has nothing to do with land use. To your question, are there issues with neighbors? Yes, there are definitely issues with neighbors on some of these facilities. That's one of the reasons why we devoted some attention to honing our definitions so they better align with state definitions. So hopefully when there is a dispute, we're talking about apples to apples. And if we're saying adult family home, for example, we all are talking about the same thing, because historically that's not the case. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that we focus on the size. There are certain size thresholds, like you pointed out in one earlier one, that there was a threshold of 6 individuals. The size issue is a big one, both in rural areas, but also where they occur in urban areas and what zone they occur in. So in this instance, we have up to 8 unrelated persons. But in other areas, there may be a desire to have the same kind of a group home that may have far more than 8 persons living in that facility. And so that's why we're trying to sort these out by scale as well as by use, so that way we can pay better attention to neighborhood impacts.
Okay, great. Could you select home business real quick?
Actually, before we leave group home, I have a quick question about that. The term mental retardation, is that I feel like that's not the commonly used term at this time, that there's a more considerate term.
That's a good catch. We can look into that.
We'll look into that.
Yeah, it's a great idea. Mental impairment or handicap. But if we can get the current, that'd be good.
Sounds antiquated.
Good catch, Commissioner. Okay. Home business, please.
Yep. Sorry, just writing down the note.
Oh, yeah, no problem. We're getting there. We're to H.
But you're choosing all the fun ones.
Home business, industrial use. Okay, great. Okay, if you wouldn't mind scrolling a little more.
And this one, looking at this definition, to my mind, this raised the question, what happens if I have a home business that's cutting firewood, that's outdoors, that's not within a structure? Or if I carve chainsaw bears for a living and I do that outdoors, mm-hmm. Does that meet the definition of a home business? And is there something we need to do here to fix that?
Interesting. Okay. Under the various sections under marijuana processing, are there any significant changes? Again, obviously related to the table itself, but are there any significant changes in the definitions that would affect, similar to the other, the group homes and the secured homes, that would affect the proprietor of the business or neighboring adjacent property owners?
No. So okay. Anything associated with marijuana in the tables as well as the definitions are a direct transfer from 17.520, which is the marijuana chapter.
Okay, that might be. Okay, I'm okay there if you want to keep scrolling.
If there is one change, I just want to be very careful. So if there is any change, and I'll confirm this, it would be where we mention that if it conflicts with the revised code of Washington, the state law is the one that governs. So
if there were a change in any of these, which I will confirm, that would be the only thing.
I have a quick follow-up. Well, I was just going to say, I'm sorry.
Commissioner Galloway, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, why don't we just defer to that code here? Why do we have a definition if that code changes? Why wouldn't we just refer to the state code on that?
I would have to get the answer from Scott Diener on that one, as he was integral in developing the code to begin with. I'll have to get back to you on that part.
So this is always a question whether we parrot state code or whether we refer to state code. And depending on the context, that distinction is important, because in some contexts, that can mean that we are building in a moving definition into our county code by just referring to the state code. Whereas parroting the language keeps ours stable, and then if there is a change in state code, then we can evaluate it and assess it when that change happens and determine whether or not we want to adopt it. So
state code doesn't govern in any of those cases, or?
In this particular case, I couldn't answer that question, off the top of my head. But in some cases, it makes sense to refer to state code. In others, it may be problematic. So we just want to think about that.
Okay. Great. Darren, if you keep scrolling. And just a reminder to commissioners, when we're doing shared screen, I can't see everybody. So feel free to speak without being recognized.
I would say for that, please let Amanda know who you are when you're talking.
Yeah, great. Great reminder. Personal services. Let's look at that one, establishment. Okay. Is that basically just codifying what's currently in effect?
For the most part.
Okay.
But as you can see, it wasn't defined before, so that's where we get into some of these situations.
Commissioner Mall?
This is Amy. We talked a little bit about the difference between dry cleaning, like drop-off and pickup, and the more industrial dry cleaning process. And I think that ended up someplace in another definition. But I don't remember.
So this is Darren from the county. The distinction between drop off and a full dry cleaning facility, that is something that is likely to be covered in 17.415, where we go into the additional regulations. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we can clarify at that point, where if it has the actual cleaning operations at on site, we can address that through that separate chapter. But we want to be careful not to regulate within the definition.
And Darren, as I recall, we did for dry cleaning, that's kind of providing that service and then shipping out the product to storefronts, and doesn't have a storefront itself. That's an industrial use, correct?
I believe that's what we came to agree upon, as that would be a processing center of some sort.
So under this definition, it's the smaller shops that have a storefront and walk-in service.
Yes.
Yeah, my concern is just that I wouldn't want to see even if it was a smaller walk-in dry cleaner, if it actually had the dry cleaning chemical operation on site, I wouldn't want to see that in certain neighborhoods, that a walk-in drop-off and it'll be picked up kind of situation was totally appropriate.
I believe that that wouldn't happen just because of the permitting for that kind of process to go on.
Yeah.
And nowadays it's kind of like your newspapers. Nobody does the printing on site anymore. It's all done at a major facility. So I, you know, not to say that it couldn't, but shouldn't.
Yep.
Okay.
Under pet non-traditional, there's the addition of agricultural livestock. Is that a policy change or is it just incorporating the current policy?
That is actually, that's something that comes from a couple of situations where we have had, the example is somebody in an urban location has sheep and goats that they're claiming are non-traditional pets instead of agricultural, because typically in the agricultural uses are not allowed in urban medium, urban high. Okay. So that's where that part came from.
Okay, great.
And that's, it's not an isolated incident. That's happened in a couple of locations, but yes, it is narrow, so.
Okay. Feel free to scroll.
Okay.
Recycling center. So this, to me, this definition is processing and converting waste. So this is the actual like industrial recycling process. Is there a place for the like drop and sort part, which can really vary from like, where can I take my plastic bags all the way up to like scrap metal sorting and
I don't believe we actually distinguish between those. From what I understand, that would have been interpreted as part of the process of the recycling center as a sorting process.
Okay, because I can imagine, I'm kind of picturing in an old neighborhood that I lived in Portland, there was somebody had taken, I think it was maybe a gas station or something. It was a small kind of neighborhood commercial business, and it was totally surrounded by residential and small businesses, and they had turned it into a little like neighborhood place where you could drop off recycling that you couldn't do curbside. And it was a fantastic addition to that kind of neighborhood setting, and it allowed people to recycle without having to drive all the way out to the industrial transfer center. And so if all recycling centers are grouped into that like massive transfer center model, I think it excludes a potentially really valuable neighborhood resource.
Okay. So if we were to make a distinction here between recycling processing center, where the recycled material is actually being processed and sorted and baled and things like that, compared to a drop site, would that answer your the need that you're describing?
Yeah, it would. I'm trying to kind of think if there are other processes that would kind of be similar in that model, so we wouldn't be creating a use that would only get used in one super limited situation, but I'll brainstorm and let you know if I come up with an idea.
Off the top of my head, other than a transfer station, which is kind of its own unique animal, the only ones that I can think of are the old dome stations and the glass drop-off places and stuff like that, which is usually an ancillary use in a parking lot of some kind of a civic facility.
Yeah. Well, something to consider if it fits in.
Okay.
I think that could be valuable.
I have taken note of that, so we will make sure to bring that up.
Great. Feel free to scroll again.
And, I had another comment in this section. Single family transitory? Oh, no, it was Oh, special care residents.
Yes.
So I had flagged this thinking that it related to more the group home situation, but it's actually more of a, it's like an ADU that wouldn't normally be allowed under the ADU definition, except it is allowed specifically because it's for caring for a family member in need. Is that correct?
Yes, this actually stems from, you'll see the I hate to use the term footnote, but the footnote down here identifies that this actually came from a footnote in the use table, 43, and it is a temporary residence that when the care of the individual is no longer needed, then that structure would then be removed from the property.
Okay, that makes sense.
Any
vacation rental.
Vacation rental.
And I know we're going to be, is it going to be, has a definition? Okay, it's the same definition carryover.
Correct.
Right, okay.
This is one of those items we're not changing.
Yeah. Okay, looks like that's the end of it, correct?
Well, that's the end of the definitions.
Right.
Yeah. I know we are at almost 8 o'clock here, so Chair, I will defer to you on what you want to do to proceed forward, but I can't answer questions on how we did the permissibility in the commercial, industrial zones, Lammerds, any of the other uses.
How long do you think we'll need?
It's purely based on if the Planning Commission needs clarification or explanation as to why we did certain things.
Okay. So. Sure, we can open it up, tell people we've had enough, I guess. We're getting close.
I would suggest that if somebody does have something they want to discuss out of the tables from the previous meeting and today's discussions, I would bring those forward.
Okay, commissioners.
I have a few.
Stop sharing here.
Commissioner Ball?
I have a few questions. I don't know if you want to do all of mine and then all of somebody else's, or if you want to go through it in some kind of order.
Feel free to proceed.
Okay, I'll just start at the beginning. There's not too many of them. Let's see. Okay, this I think maybe is just an error on line 132, mobile home. In the FRL column, it is green and I think it should be red, because it's going from permitted to conditional.
Okay.
Let's see.
I'm going to share my screen on this just so that everybody can see what you're talking about. Same forest resource. Okay, I see what you're talking about. Thank you.
Okay.
So I'm making note of that.
Great. Let's see. Kind of a general question for the general retail merchandise store category. It's broken up into square footages. And I was curious how the 4,000 square foot was chosen. I'm kind of visualizing that, and that seems quite large to me. So just in a general sense, how was that threshold developed?
Since we didn't change the square footage on this, I am not absolutely certain how we established the 4,000. Angie, do you have any awareness, or Jeff?
I feel bad asking about this.
And it's okay if it's a holdover and it's not something that we want to deal with. That
It was something that we pulled over from the existing code. These are the existing scalable categories that we have right now. So it wasn't something that we looked into as something to change at this time.
Okay.
It is open. So
my only thought was just that when we're looking at making that a conditional use in urban low, just that a 4,000 square foot store would be very different from like a, 1,000 square foot little, maybe converted part of a house kind of situation or something. 4,000 square foot seems quite large for urban low. Well, it might be totally appropriate for other situations.
Aaron, in urban low, those are limited as to where they can occur, correct? Mm-hmm.
That is correct. So when we come out with the additional regulations, that's something where we're talking about only doing it at major intersections in these two zones.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Arterial collector, collector to collector.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I guess my thought is if there was a category for a smaller type of business that might be more appropriate outside of those areas, if we're really looking at encouraging walkability, that might down the road be a benefit to have an option for kind of smaller scale neighborhood shops.
Okay. That is something that we can look into.
Let's see. Scrolling. Oh, okay. So all the way down to 602 aggregate extraction sites.
I assume you're talking about the residential zones?
I am still in residential zones. Yeah, I'm on page 15, if that helps.
Which is right here.
Yeah, so it is permitted in forest resource lands, but conditional in mineral resource overlay. Should that be reversed?
So that is a unique one. This permitted outright is in the existing table. It has a footnote number 4 attached to it. So it's permitted only when it's used to create roads used for forest harvest.
Oh, okay.
So that would show up in 17.415 as well.
Okay, that makes sense.
Good catch, though. That is a very good catch.
Okay. Let's see. Oh, we talked about special care units. Okay, drinking establishments in industrial areas. It looks like they used to be allowed. And oh, I'm on page 19. They used to be allowed, but no longer. And I'm curious about that. Because I'm just picturing little, like neighborhood pub that all the guys and girls go to after work. It's down the street from the office. And then I'm also picturing I've seen like brew pubs that sort of pop up in industrial parks where they have been brewing and then they kind of turn into a little pub sort of thing.
Right. So the best answer I can give on that is that where we've shown the changes in permissibility, we specifically acquired that through the zone purpose statements, zone intent. Mm-hmm. And the business center, business park, industrial zones, the intent statements on those didn't include this kind of activity. That's not to say that we can't, that you can't suggest that they remain.
Okay.
But to the suggestion of brew pubs, they are allowed as an ACUP. Mm-hmm. correct?
Okay. Yeah.
Yes. And that, they are allowed as an ACUP at the moment.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, this is not something I'm going to, you know, fight long and hard about, but I guess I just think that a drinking establishment in an industrial area would not be problematic.
If I remember correctly, we actually, in the original matrix that went out to the public, a citizen had sent in public comment about that very subject, about allowing it in those areas so you could shorten the distance between the establishment and home, and actually reference trying to reduce the number of DUIs and that type of thing. So you're not the only one.
Okay. Let's see. I think I'm almost through all my comments. Oh, okay. So adaptive reuse of commercial buildings. So this is page 25. There's an adaptive reuse of commercial buildings and a shared work / makerspace. And these are both either permitted or conditional in most cases, but then public facilities, they're not permitted. And so I'm imagining a situation where, like, say there's an old school and it, you know, the school gets a new facility and now there's this old school building and they're going to turn the land around it into a park. And somebody has this great idea, like, let's make adaptive reuse of this building. Oh, I guess that wouldn't be a commercial building now. But I can imagine a situation basically where there's a building that could be reused to make like an art center with a shared work makerspace, and it's on public property, it's associated with a park. That could be really fantastic, but this is making that impossible.
Okay. That would be something we can bring up during the deliberations as well.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good point, thank you.
And I think that's my last one, let's see. Oh, wait, no, we caught that. Yep, that's it for me.
Thank you. That was very helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Commissioners, any other comments about the table? Anybody? Going once, going twice? Commissioner Shattuck, nothing more? You're mute. There you are.
My pontification for the night. I feel you're better.
That's okay. We're going to come back to it. And if we have a really short list, hopefully we can come back and address it thoughtfully that meets everybody's approval.
Right. And just remember, you do have deliberations to go through these things. A lot of these are deliberative discussions. So as we move through public process, you'll also get that input to help you with these discussions as well.
Absolutely. Yep. Great.
Certainly not your last or only opportunity.
Right. Yep. And parking lot's probably not the best description of what we're trying to accomplish, but that's good enough. Okay, any other final questions or comments? Okay, Darren, if you could remind us again and the members of the public about our next meeting.
And sure. Next meeting is going to be on July 7th. That is intended to review the additional regulations that complement these two resource guides that you've received, the staff report and the ordinance recommendation. And then July 21st is when we expect to have the public hearing. So the materials for the July 7th meeting, we anticipate getting those out a week in advance, and that's going to start our public comment period with an online comment portal. And those comments will be provided to the Planning Commission for their deliberations as well. So even if you can't make the public hearing, you can still provide comments to us.
Great. Commissioners, are you satisfied with the process so far and the dates? Okay, great. Thank you, Darren. Appreciate your being here today and sticking with us late into the evening.
Thank you. You had a lot of materials to review recently.
Yeah, thanks. And then multiple projects and having to shift back and forth too, but that's okay. Great. So now we'll move to agenda item I for the good of the order. And I'm sorry, I forgot to thank Liz too. And Jeff chimed in. In fact, I don't know if you guys realized it, but this is the first virtual meeting we've had where every commissioner participated materially in the discussion, and most of us thoroughly. So I'm very pleased about that, especially with getting used to this new technology. And that's something I think we kind of missed with the in-person meetings where people felt very comfortable and felt that they could participate in the outcome. And so I'm very happy that everybody was participating in the meeting tonight. So thank you.
Nobody knew you were keeping score.
What was that?
Nobody knew you were keeping score.
Yeah, as commissioner, former chairperson Allen can tell you, that's the tough side of trying to participate as a commissioner and being chairperson. In fact, I much prefer just being a commissioner. You don't have to worry about all the other things that come with running the meeting. So not to discourage anybody, because that's another reminder, we need somebody to be the chairperson next year and vice chairperson. So we're getting closer, Commissioner others. Commissioner Phillips said you didn't see him jumping up and down, but
dodging is more the term.
We'll call it your halftime reminder. How about that, Mr. Chair?
Hey, and we've got a fabulous staff. Amanda's fantastic. In fact, I don't know how she does it. Like Commissioner Shattuck mentioned, it helped me too, looking at her workload over on the other side with the hearing examiner and all the deadlines and dates and good grief. It's a lot. So thanks to Amanda as well. You do a great job, and we appreciate all the staff and all the things they do. And it was great having the director, Jeff Remack, here tonight as well. Okay, thanks, any Mike. Go ahead.
I have an issue that I think we need to consider. Hopefully, we'll be back to real meetings in that. But I would, I wonder out loud, is there a way to keep the Zoom meeting part of the meeting so that if somebody was to become quarantined or something, we would not lose their participation?
Commissioner Phillips, this is Angie Silva with the Department of Community Development. We are exploring that possibility. So earlier in the evening, I mentioned that the governor's emergency proclamation on the Open Public Meetings Act and allowing virtual meetings to comply with that requirement was authorized. That concludes tomorrow. However, mm-hmm. The Kitsap County is not yet authorized to enter into phase 3, which allows for gatherings of 50 people or more, as well as opening government services to the public. We, as most folks know, we are moving forward through the Kitsap County Public Health District, as well as our follow-up, our Board of County Commissioners taking action on an application to submit to the State Department of Health to seek opening up to phase 3. Those meetings are scheduled for this Friday, which is the 19th. So as part of that, there's a lot of things up in the air, et cetera, as it relates to the Open Public Meetings Act, but consistent with the Board of County Commissioners and what they are looking at. We will follow their lead on open public meetings, but do know the Board of County Commissioners have stated they are interested in keeping and exploring the virtual format, as there's some efficiencies, especially as folks would like to participate but don't want to drive all the way to Port Orchard to attend that meeting. So we are looking into it, but stay tuned.
Okay.
And there is some precedent for it. I know a number of city councils and county councils will offer a call-in option or a video option for commissioners that are absent for one reason or another. Or council members. So that was permissible under the Open Meetings Act, and it's the all or nothing that I think needed the exception.
Yep. Well, I've participated on meetings such as that well within the existing allowable use of RCW. It's the use of kind of formats like Zoom, for example, and the potential security threats that we've experienced because we've been all forced on this virtual platform, and how to work it through those nuances. So for example, South Kitsap School District Board of Directors, I don't know if anybody read the newspaper a couple of weeks ago, but they had someone hack in their virtual meeting and display inappropriate material during that public meeting, and they had to shut it down.
Well, and part of the reason that I bring the topic up is because in the past, we've always been limited because of equipment availability and being able to set it up. I think a silver lining to all this is that there are now easier ways to set up these virtual meetings. And I would hate to see us lose that ability, just, oh, everything's rosy, let's go back to it.
Great. Any other forget of the order? No. Commissioner Beam.
Can I ask, what's the scheduled plan for Shoreline Master Plan?
That is based on the college's guidance of a revised deadline for adoption. We are still looking at a June 30th, 2021 targeted adoption and effective date for the county. As shared before with planning commissioners at previous meetings, we currently have two long-range planner vacancies. One has been frozen due to general fund budget concerns for the year 2020, and looking that will continue well into 2021 budget forecasts. We did move forward with recruitment of one of the open vacant planner positions. Regrettably, we struggled early on in this year getting qualified applicants to apply. We recently made an offer to an applicant. Unfortunately, as of this morning, the applicant declined as they received a promotional opportunity with their existing employer. So next step is to discuss internally what resources we have available to us to kickstart and move that forward.
I would add to that effective last week, we just went under contract with Department of Ecology for state funding to fund that update.
Thank you.
Any other announcements for good of the order? Okay, too quickly, I'll mention one is Amanda is working on the annual report. We're a little bit behind schedule because of our new format and other work requirements. And usually we release the report, and then afterwards will be the joint meeting with the Board of County Commissioners. And actually the timing's probably good because I think it would be in our interest and the commissioners' interest that we can participate with them as much as possible in an in-person meeting later this year, rather than trying to get all of us in one big virtual room. Okay. Although who knows what the future holds, it may still come to it, but we'll see how things go. And hopefully we'll get a vaccine soon. If there are no further announcements, is there a motion to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Okay, is there a second? We're either tired or nobody wants to adjourn. Okay, we have a motion and second to adjourn. All those in favor, say aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Any abstentions? Meeting is adjourned at 8:14 p.m. Thank you, everybody, and we'll see you at the next meeting.
All right. Night.